Hey, Roberto, how you doing?
Doing good, Jackie, doing good.
Great, great. So, are you ready to talk House of Cards again?
I'm always ready to talk House of Cards. I don't think there's very few times when I'm not ready to talk House of Cards.
Me too. I really could talk about it anytime, any place.
Well, especially this episode. Of all the episodes, I think this might be one of my favorites.
So good. It was so good. I just loved the story of Freddy. But yeah, this is, so for those of you who are tuning in, we are talking about season 2, episode 9, or chapter 22. So what did you love about this episode?
Honestly, this is what's going to sound weird, because it's funny how many episodes I watch and that I go, okay, you know what? I like the ending, or like this. It seems to be like the extremes of things, either the ending of an episode or either the beginning of an episode. And I love the opening sequence for this episode. Out of all things, we're essentially following Freddy in his morning routine before he opens up the barbecue. You know, before anyone's awake, he's going through his town, going through his calisthenics, his gravity, rig and whatnot. I love it because of how it just kind of show, you know, this sort of slice of life of Freddy, the things that we haven't seen, because we usually follow Frank going into Freddy's, and it's like, why the heck is Frank going to this, you know, random barbecue in the middle of, like, you know, for lack of better words, the ghetto? And it gets, you know, they're following Freddy and just how effed up his life is and just how things have to go through. And then we get to that last scene where he's like, he picks up the paper, we see the scandal picture of Adam and them, and he just burns it for barbecue. It's just like, I love that opening sequence. It's such a great sequence, very little dialogue, if any.
I love that they show his morning routine, that he gets, I don't know what that device is called, but he tilts upside down. And
it's called a gravity rig, I think. My dad has one, actually, for his back.
Okay, that's true. That is for back pain as well. But I was just going to say, as all of us get older, we kind of know also sometimes how difficult it is to get up in the morning to get the blood back to your brain. So certainly that does it too. So it's like all of these things. And so it's kind of a little bit of a touch on how tough his life really is. I mean, he's by making this business of his own, but it could be.
What's interesting is it really adds what I like about this episode overall is it adds a layer of humanity to Freddy and a layer of character that had been really, really lacking, because Freddy had been this sort of just, it was more of, hey, Frank needs to move around a location. Let's put him in the, you know, from a writer's perspective, like, well, he can't be in the White House all the time, and he can't be with Claire all the time. Where would Freddy hang? Well, I guess we'll put him in this barbecue, and that sort of becomes this less of a Freddy point, but more of a, here's Frank dealing with somebody that's somewhat of a colleague or somewhat of a friend, something that's totally external from all of this. And what I like about this episode in general is that it adds a lot more depth to Freddy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this is one of a few episodes of this season that make me that causes me to like season 2 more than season 1. And most everybody you talk to, they'll all say, oh no, season 1 was much better. But I think this is what takes it over. If it wasn't for this episode, I don't think I would feel that way about this season. Because I really love seeing the personal casualties of Frank and Claire and their power run and how it affects these people around them that actually care about them.
We should probably go in a little bit what's happening with Freddy in the story, Jackie, and the idea that, you know, because though there is some other storylines going on this episode, I really think that this episode's sort of central core thing really is Freddy and almost these – what I like about this episode overall, we'll talk about Claire and Adam later on, but what I like about it is it really covers sort of these almost one-off characters that were very important to our main characters' lives, that being Frank and Claire, but dealing with their – not only the fallout of stuff that happens to both Frank and Claire, but how that all kind of meshes up. Explain kind of what happened this episode. Let's start with the Freddy kind of storyline really quick.
Well, absolutely. I mean, what it really comes down to is Tusk is now sort of retaliating against Frank. We don't see Tusk much in this episode. But what he does do is he does leak to the press a story about Freddy's criminal background and then also his son's background because his son starts to get involved in the business. So we'll go into that.
Yep.
Frank kind of has to distance himself a little bit because of this criminal background. At first, Frank is absolutely no way am I going to distance myself. He's my friend, pretty much. And that those are going to be the questions that I want to ask you is, were they really friends? The parallel, the Claire and Adam story, is obviously just a parallel to highlight this Freddy incident. So basically, Freddy gets approached by someone to buy his store and create a chain of Freddy barbecues all over the country. And they were going to offer him $95,000. You know, I'm kind of, and the guy says, you know, you can go ask your attorney and have your attorney look over it. And he says, I don't have one. But you know darn well he could have very easily pulled Frank aside one time when he came in for barbecue and asked him what he thought. But he didn't. He didn't. He just said, I don't have an attorney. I'll take this deal. I'll take the $95,000. But to me, $95,000 to turn your business into what could be a very productive franchise, I think is a little low. You know,
it probably is, but this is coming from, again, this is what I think I like about Freddie is that he is very, you know, much kind of like Frank, he is very independent. He picked himself up from his own bootstraps. And we do learn a little bit of his past in this one, that he wasn't always the most pleasant of people and wasn't that. He's doing his damnedest to be right with everything. And while, yes, he could have pulled Frank aside, while, yes, he could have done something else, I think it's very important from Freddie's point of view to keep up with to essentially, you know, to keep up with the thing that, like, I'm doing this on my own, and I built this business from square one. I didn't do it, you know, Frank did involve it, was involved in anything in this. This is my thing. I make the call, I make the decision. You know what? It's time to, you know, cash out.
He definitely has a lot of pride in that because he did serve time for, was it vehicular manslaughter, unintentional? He killed an elderly couple. But, you know, as Frank says, he served his time and, you know, he's been a friend and, you know, but then it starts to change when Freddie's son Freddie basically reaches out to his son that he's hasn't really had a great relationship with because he was in prison and he was in a gang before he started his business. And he asks his son to come and work with him. And his son is basically saying, I don't need your handout. And Freddie says to him in a way that, you know, it's not about you. It's your grandson as well. And, you know, so the son decides, yeah, this is great. I'll come and help. And we find out that the son has he's on parole, so he can't carry a firearm. And then there's a scene where some reporters are coming at them, bothering them about his criminal record and Freddie's criminal record and their connection to the vice president. And the son flips out and pulls out a gun on them. And that's just, you know, he's obviously carrying and the press are taking photos and
yep.
you know he's going in. He's going to go to jail.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Everything starts to fall down pretty quickly for Freddie. Which is a shame.
So then I guess we should probably get to the point, because obviously all this leads up to Frank kicking it in Freddy's place, for lack of better words. Let's just get to the, you know, elephant in the room.
Right.
Do you think, and I'll ask you first because I have my opinion.
Okay.
Do you think Freddy and Frank were friends, one, and two, if you think not the case, do you think Frank viewed Freddie as a friend as opposed to the other way around?
That is such a hard question. I think originally I believe that they were really not. They were really not friends. That maybe Freddie believed to a degree that he had a friend in Frank, but it wasn't the other way around. But this time watching, I do think that Frank viewed him as a friend, but after the events with Claire and Adam came up and he saw how easily she was willing to manipulate Adam, which we could talk about later, that he kind of thought, well, I certainly, this is exactly what I should be doing. He didn't even go as far as manipulating Freddie. He just basically said, I cannot be a part of this. But he was willing to give him money for his son's bail. And Freddie absolutely refused it because he is a man of pride. He took mm-hmm. himself out of being a felon and started a business. He did whatever he could to succeed. So he's very proud of that success and what he's done for himself. So he's, I completely understand him not wanting to take money from Frank. And I think the point is, there was that one at the final scene between Freddie and Frank where Freddie says, "You weren't a friend, you were just a good customer." Gosh, that kind of hurt because it seemed like they were friends. But I think what Freddie was really doing was saying to Frank, "Don't worry about it. I'm going to kind of let you off here because you were a customer. And that's the way we're going to keep it, because you can't be associated with me. And I understand that. And as a friend, I'm letting you go. And you were just a good customer."
It's so tough because part of me goes and says, yes, they definitely had something more than just simply customer and vendor of food relationship, even if it's a good customer. Because you note, especially near that scene, that Frank mentions that, "Oh, yeah, I know that band." He's like, "Really? I have like some vinyls. We could have been jamming the whole damn time." It's like, yeah, we could have. And it felt like Frank was more concerned about the actual barbecue place and a little bit of Freddie and sort of his son, things like that. But he was super concerned about the barbecue place. He was super concerned about that place being there, because I think to Frank, that was one of the few places that he didn't have to wear. I mean, he has to still wear certain masks, obviously. He still has to, you know, keep certain appearances up. Like, he can't tell everything to Freddie per se. But it's one of the few places that he can kind of be a little honest. He can kind of be a little bit more him. And more importantly, it's a very safe place to be that. It's never part of politics. Any of their relationship between Freddie and Frank has never been like, "Well, I got to convince Freddie to vote for me," or "I got to convince Freddie to get in with the Chinese," or whatever. It's like, "No, I just had to buy barbecue. I just had to expect really good barbecue, give really good money, and that's about it. And that's all I need to do here."
Yeah,
and it's a very sacred place for him. It's very much this place that at any point in time, no matter whether he's vice president or the senator or whatever, he could say, "You know what? Hey, Freddie, is it cool if I come in right now?" And it's his sort of very much, this is his decompression area, and this is where I'm going to hang around, because no one here is going to judge me either good or bad.
Yeah, and Freddie didn't really bother him while he was eating his ribs. He just brought him more, asked him if he wanted more, and would only strike up conversation when, you know, about the heat wave.
And talking about how, like, so you saw this energy crisis, Frank. He was like, you know, people do when it comes to this, they have, you know, intercourse, for lack of better words, in a bit stronger vernacular. But that's all he did. That's something that you know, if I were in front of the vice president, maybe I wouldn't talk like that. But because he's not the vice president of Freddie, he's Frank. He's not even like the house whip. He's Frank. He's always been Frank. And that's a very important distinction, is that he doesn't have the quote-unquote fame there. And that's something that I think Frank, as he gets more and more powerful and more kind of as the eye of the media and everybody else turns to him and focuses on him, it's a great place to have. It's a great place just to go to be like, this is where I'm not necessarily anonymous, but I'm not the vice president. I am Frank Underwood and nothing more. And that's sometimes very valuable to have when you're of that level.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it also, I started thinking about a previous episode where Frank and Claire invited the Walkers over for dinner, and they had ribs. So Freddie came and brought the ribs, but you never see Freddie sitting down with them eating the ribs. However, they say, "Freddie, that was so good. Thank you so much." And he says, "It was a pleasure to meet you, First Lady and Mr. President," and then he leaves. It wasn't like he was really invited over as a friend to sit down.
No, he was catering.
Right. So, was he that's certainly a customer.
I mean, yes, there's always going to be that, and it's such a tenuous relationship, but ultimately, it's a bit of both. I mean, it's you know, at the end scene, you know, when he's walking out, you know, he's like, take care of yourself, Freddy. You too, Frank. You know, there's still a there's still that kind of relationship, no matter what, you know, no matter what either says as their sort of professional kind of thing. But that's why I think Frank loved Freddy's as much, and why he wanted to make sure that barbecue stayed around and him stayed around, is because it's really a place that he can go. And he doesn't have to wear any other masks. He doesn't have to be a vice president. He doesn't have to be a, you know, house whip. He doesn't have to be anything. He's just nothing more than Frank Underwood, a loyal customer. And that's very valuable to have as you get down. Mm-hmm. Before we move on to Claire and Adam, I got to actually read an ad. We got to make sure to thank at least one person, one company, one entity that really covers a lot of what happens here at the British Tech Network, and that is UK2.net. They cover all the bandwidth costs and hosting of the British Tech Network. UK2 can hook you up with web addresses, help you build websites, and give you all the tools you need to help manage the way your website handles traffic and downloads. If our good friend Charlotte Henry was here with us today, she would be singing the praises of all the stuff that her server can handle, all the different traffic loads and everything else. I'm certain as she gets back into blogging, she's actually working on other things. We'll be hearing even more praise of UK2.net. So head on over to BritishTechNetwork.com/sponsors for a list of offers and codes available to you. And we'd like to thank UK2.net for supporting everything here at the British Tech Network.
Shall we talk Claire and Adam?
Yes, we shall.
So this is the other end of the Tusk attack in the press. Yeah. He leaks out a story. Basically, he gets Remy to go out and dig up information. And he finds out that there may have been an affair because he's talked to her former assistant, director of the Clean Water Initiative that she fired way, way back in season one. And she says, well, maybe she may have had an affair with him. So Remy gets the goods on it. He goes out. He finds these photos that Adam took. He buys them up. And they go into the press. And it looks like she's having an affair with Adam Galloway. And so Claire really plays this poor man bad. She doesn't tell him what her plan was. And So basically, I'll say it quickly, and then I'll ask you, was she planning this? Was she planning to manipulate him? Because first she says, you've got to go on and deny this. You've got to go talk to the press, and you've got to deny that we had an affair. Or that you have to deny that you took the photos, excuse me. And so he does that, and then she turns around, gives her own press conference, and says, well, of course he took the photos. It was a gift to my husband. Then he reaches further, and he finds a photo of her taking a shower. And they release that. And so Seth, being the PR genius he is, hires a model who looks like her to take a similar photo, and they go on the news, and he says, if I could make a photo like this in 1 hour, I'm sure, you know, someone else could fake a photo and say,
right.
Yeah, so didn't she really like this guy?
Again, this is where we get an interesting thing of Claire as a character, because if we remember back at that point in time, that was during the season one days. That was during the Claire doesn't want to, you know, does Claire want a kid? Does Claire not want a kid? And all this stuff, you know, all, at the same time as Zoe and everything else going on in between. We have an entirely different Claire right now. We no longer have Claire of the Water Initiative or Claire of the wife to the house whip. We now have Claire, the wife to the vice president, Claire, who is manning a actual bill through Congress that could change a lot of things. We have that Claire now. That Claire is ruthless. That Claire is a little bit uncaring at times, but that Claire gets things done. And this is but a wrench in that. So yes, at that point she liked him, at that point for sure. But then Claire, for lack of better words, came to her senses and realized, oh, wait, that's not what I want. And so it's tricky, but that's what had to happen, you know? I mean, especially when it came to that.
And it was really funny to hear. During this time, this was going on, they met. She called Adam to her house to talk, and then surprise, surprise, Frank's right there in the room. So yep. She, you know, and they start talking, and you know, he tells her how disappointed he is in her and the way she handled it. Why didn't she just tell her from the beginning? And he's very like kind of aggressive, and Frank just jumps right in and says, "I don't care what you think. What kind of past you have with her? Your past is insignificant to our relationship. You don't even begin to understand our relationship." And, you know, like, Claire's just sitting back letting these two guys go head to head about, you know, who's more important in her life in the long run, which I thought was funny.
Well, because, again, Adam, this is what's funny, is that Adam thought what they had was real. And it might have been real for that moment in time. And I think that's important to state, is that from Adam's point of view, that was a very real thing that happened. That was a very real thing. That was a very cherished moment. To Claire, that was a fling. That was like, I got this done. I got it out of my system. I'm moving on now.
That's
how it is with the Underwoods.
Was it even really a fling, or was it, you know? Because now thinking back about it, maybe it was just her. It was her attempt to get at Frank. Because
that's why it was something. It was something that she needed to get out of her system.
She was angry with Frank because he wanted to. He wouldn't support her with the water initiative thing, and so she disappeared. She left, and she was gone for a while until Peter Russo.
Yeah, it was a thing she needed to work out. Adam was there. And once it was worked out, that's it. It's done. Over. Who cares? I will never, ever think of you again, because if you keep that in mind, we have not heard from Adam since that episode cycle. We have not even heard him mentioned. He wasn't even a character in
any. I forgot his name. I thought his name was Peter Galloway.
No, that's why. He had not come back in any capacity until those photos came about. Once those photos came about, that's a different story. We're in that cycle of things. But that's the point, is that in these two characters' minds, Adam wasn't even a thought. It's like, now I got to deal with this again. Let me deal with this again. And that's how Claire kind of viewed it, because it wasn't even Claire said, "Oh, by the way, I slept with a guy." You know, it was just like, nope, we're going to keep moving on until it comes to Tusk and his infinite wisdom, like, we must destroy Frank. Let us get the photos of this seedy underpass of Claire Underwood, which meant absolutely positively nothing.
And, you know, she says to Frank, when he's concerned about Freddy, she says, and this is going on, and, like, both scenes are going, you know, juxtaposed between the two, and you see Claire tell Frank that he's caring too much about Freddy and he needs to focus. And, you know, and I think that that's the point where Frank realizes, yes, I do need to distance myself from Freddy. So I think that Frank cared more about Freddy than Claire ever gave a damn about Adam.
Oh, for sure. Because we see, if you want to talk about in terms of, like, writing perspective, we see a hell of a lot more of Freddy than we see of Adam. We see Freddy very many times, and I hope we see Freddy again come season 3, just for my own personal fun, because I like Freddy as a character.
I agree.
But we, like I said before, we but get, like, Adam for, like, one, maybe two episodes. Like, we get him for season 1, you know, as this sort of, like, oh, hi. Claire and them had a thing, and they still have a thing, but after season 1 was done, we never heard from Adam again. We never heard from him after that, after the picture thing. We never even heard but phone calls between the two.
Maybe glad if we don't see him again.
We probably won't. We probably won't at all.
But I do want to see Freddy. I do want to see Freddy. And you know,
the point is that that's what Adam was to Claire. He was this thing that happened at a very important time. He was this thing that happened again at a very important time. And that's it. It was nothing more. It was nothing to her. Mm-hmm. And to Adam, and if we remember back in season 1, you know, this is the guy that was like, why don't you just leave Frank? You love me. You have all this stuff with me. We have this beautiful relationship. And even to Adam, it's forgotten to a certain degree. Even to Adam, he's like, I just want to hook up with my new girl. I just want to marry her. I just want to get this all out of the way.
Yeah.
And, like, somehow those photos he still had, you know, he could have just burned them or torched them or deleted them or whatever, but he kept them. So there's,
good,
you know,
point.
From Adam's point of view, this meant more than from Claire's, because Claire couldn't give a damn less.
Yeah, because Adam is the one to make it clear to Claire that his new fiance that he's only known a couple months means more to her, him than she ever did, you know?
Yeah.
But that was just kind of like a,
Why keep the photos in the first place, you know?
Right. Absolutely. So when you say you want to see Freddy again, why? What is it about this story? Because to me, it's kind of the whole, just the kind of the casualty of it. But also, I love that finally we get an element of society that is in this Washington community that is, and how, you know, because to me, it almost reminds me of The Wire. People stuck in the hole.
I think that's why. I think a lot of things I like about Freddy as a character, I want to see him again, if nothing more. I like him as a sort of casual place of Frank go. But there are certain things that were implied in that episode that I would love for them to tackle more. I don't know if it's appropriate for House of Cards to tackle those topics.
That's true.
My only concern is I don't know if because there's a line where he's talking about the franchising. He's like, well, why don't they just come here? It's not like, you know, not like we're gonna let them here. He's like, well, they want the barbecue experience, but the one in the suburbs, and you want me to play the, you know, the word,
right?
And it's like, I like that was even lightly tackled of this sort of, you know, when we take this sort of very, very urban thing, and we gotta make it appropriate for the white folk, and I love that.
Yeah, they want to Disneyland his
I would love to, you know, because they're talking about, yeah, we're gonna make the walls look like they're peeling and things like that. It's like, oh, so you're gonna make it look like it's in the ghetto, because that's the appeal. And I loved how it was just lightly tackled. I'm like, I would love for that more to be tackled, but I don't know if House of Cards is the appropriate venue for that.
Good point. Jackie, there's already so much going on.
Jackie, where can people find you online these days?
JackieHearn.com. And if you want to check out my YouTube, I'm doing some children's stories. I'm writing, illustrating, and narrating children's stories, but also stories for adults that are children. So there's a two separate thing there.
You've been doing that pretty well and things like that. You're also working on another, out of all the things, another fan cast coming up pretty soon with my good friend Rick Foster.
Actually, you're right. This is the week I did want to plug it. So thank you. It is Lawyer Up Podcast. So if you want to go to iTunes, you can subscribe to us. It is all about the Better Call Saul series on AMC. And yeah, myself, Rick Foster, and we're gonna have guests throughout. Maybe we drag you into it if you watch the show.
Probably, most likely. It's very rare that if you ever say, "Hey, do you want to guest this podcast?" Sure. Yeah, that becomes the thing I do.
You're really great. You're a beast at podcasting. I was saying that to you earlier. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing, because it's...
Well, if you want to find me in anything I do, I'm at Vincent404 there on the Twitters. And if you just want to catch any of the content I tend to do, whether it be my so-called 8-Bit Life, Jump Point, Cinematography, other kind of weird, geeky podcasts, head on over to my website, or my network, technically, cosmicradio.tv.
Amazing. Great. All right. Until next time, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.